We're sitting here now with a young filmmaker, Finn Boylan, from Bray in County Wicklow, who has a very interesting story to tell us. He's just back from spending 7 weeks in Ukraine, documenting the lives of those in the midst of the war. How are you doing, Finn?
How's it going, Ray? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. So you were living in where? Berlin, was it?
I was living in Berlin, correct.
Right, and war broke out in Ukraine. So what happened next for you?
Well, there was only one way I was going. It was east, and many motivations drove me that direction, I would say. But I'd say the main ones are, I have a master's in filmmaking. I'm a student of history, studied a bachelor's here in UCD 8 years ago. And that coincided with the Maidan Revolution, the annexation of Crimea and the outbreak of war in the east. So I was glued to that in my final year of my studies in 2014. And yeah, basically been following this conflict for 8 years. And when the war broke out on the 24th of February, I knew which way I was going. And I also, just before the war, set up my own film production company. It existed only on paper as soon as the war broke out. So I said, all right, let's go.
Finn Films.
Finhouse Films, it's called.
Finhouse Films, right.
Finhouse Films, yeah.
So in your head, you were sort of, this is your day, this is your moment. All your roads have been leading to this.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, it wasn't my first hotspot I'd ever been to. I mean, I've been to West Bank, West Sahara, Gaza, Kashmir, Nagorno-Karabakh in Armenia. Also the two breakaway regions in Georgia as well, South Ossetia and Abkhazia. So
let's find out the motivation behind that then. So at what stage in your life did you decide that you wanted to document conflict? Because most people run away from it.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every single nation state that exists on this planet exists as a result or an outcome of conflict. Even the Irish nation in itself is a result of conflict. And you could say, if you want to look at a nation that doesn't exist as a result of conflict, you could probably just point to Tibet. And the only reason that they aren't recognised by a single country around the world is because they never played the nation state building game of declaring independence, fighting a war of independence, or, you know, any of this. So, I mean, to run away from conflict, I mean, you can't shy away from it. It will eventually find you. And, you know, conflict can often breed growth. I mean, the Big Bang, for example.
Right.
The moon crashing into the earth, bringing our tidal systems into sync. I mean, conflict is a part of life.
Yes, I understand
As much as peace is.
Yeah, but military conflict it sort of goes hand in hand with danger. And most people, given the choice, would avoid it. But you went into the jaws of it, if you like. So you're there, war breaks out. What, do you go straight into Ukraine?
I tried to find a story to bring me there originally. And I was in Berlin when the war broke out, and there was 500,000 people protesting in Brandenburg Gate when the war kicked off on the 24th. And I met an acquaintance, somebody I'd met at a few parties before. He's an American fella, Thomas Humphreys, Irish name, but his mother is German. She's a German diplomat, and the father was a lieutenant colonel in the American Armed Forces. So the two of us got together. He said he wanted to, he's a chemistry student, so there's a lot of connections to doctors and antibiotics and everything. So the two of us put our heads together and organized an aid mission. And I wanted to kind of film this story because, you know, an American, son of an American soldier and a German diplomat kind of represent the post-war dynamic. The NATO alliance is kind of personified in this character. Right. So I came back here. I hadn't been home to Ireland in almost 3 years. I was in Africa for a year in Mali. And then I got back to Spain and Corona broke out. So I hadn't seen my family in almost 3 years. So I came back here before I decided, knowing that I was going to Ukraine, I came back to see my family for a week. And my father helped me fundraise and we got together 13 grand. And my friend also got together around the same. So nearly 30 grand in aid. And he organized with his chemistry connections in the universities, some doctors to buy us tourniquets, saline solution, syringes, antibiotics, chest seals for gunshot wounds. And we drove this to Lviv. They dropped all the gear in Lviv to the Zadarovy Agency, which is an NGO working for the Ukrainian Department of Health. And they basically turned around and I said, see you later, guys. And that was the start of my journey into Ukraine.
They were going back to Germany and you were staying on.
Yeah, so they thought I was absolutely mental.
With your gear.
With my gear, with my camera, my mics, my radio mics, my tripods and my body armour.
And you said earlier on that you needed a story, so that part of your story was gone, so you needed a new story to focus on. What was that?
It happened pretty quickly. I took the last beer out of the car before I said goodbye to the lads as they drove away, and I was sitting down in the square with all my gear, my pressed body armour, and I was sipping on this beer wondering, okay, I'm in Ukraine now, what the hell do I do now? And I was sipping the beer no more than 5 minutes. At this time, I didn't know that alcohol was illegal in Ukraine at the time, because the Ukrainians don't want, Ukrainian government don't want soldiers drinking and shooting each other accidentally.
Yeah.
So I didn't know alcohol was illegal at this time. I'm sipping on a Kronenbacher German beer. And then 5 minutes later, I hear an Irish accent going, "Hey, pal, where'd you get that beer?" And lo and behold, was a fellow Wicklow man, and he was with some foreign fighters, and so the story continued with him and some an American okay. and a Swede onto.
So these are they called mercenaries, or what are they?
Well, mercenaries would be they're soldiers. Yeah. They would go to any conflict regardless okay, of its
but these
moral
guys
compass.
Yes,
they were there to join up and help in any way possible. Now the Irish fella didn't have any military experience, but he was tagging along with some American Marine. And a Swedish sniper. But yeah, you wouldn't class them as mercenaries because they were actually looking to join up and be a part of a nation state's yes, army. So once you're in an actual nation state's army under the command of government, you are not considered a mercenary.
And so these are fascinating people, aren't they? And they make good topics for documentaries.
It is, yeah. It's a question of access. It takes time for them to for you to build your trust with them, you know. And there's so many journalists out there that are looking for the quick soundbite, you know, the 2 minute pack, 2 minute soundbite, action sequence, bam, send it to the live stream to the studio for 5 o'clock. So
that's the way the world's gone, isn't
it? Yeah, so a lot of journalists would fail to get this kind of access. But in the end, I ended up following them around for nearly a month. And was with them, with the American and the Swedes, training, watching them train territorial defence in Kiev. And then I was down also with them in Mykolaiv on the front line.
So they were training with the Ukrainian army?
They were training fresh recruits coming in for the territorial defence, correct? And they trained about 2,000 of them in about a month. And then they got a little bit tired of this and wanted to see some action, so they joined some volunteer battalions in the south to go and get into the fight.
So tell us about those volunteer battalions. They weren't official Ukrainian army then?
They're not official. There's many, many volunteer battalions. You'll see probably yellow and blue armbands, tape around the arm. This represent the regular Ukrainian army, but if you see green tape wrapped around someone's arm, it's a volunteer battalion. They are kind of organized and coordinated by the Ukrainian military, but they don't answer directly to the Ukrainian military. So they're almost like a paramilitary force in a sense. But
I was looking at some of your footage and there were guys there with Union Jacks in yellow and blue.
Yeah.
So that is that what people did? They had their national flag, but in yellow and blue.
That you see that quite a bit, yeah. Actually, yeah. It's a way to show, you know, your nation as your foreign fighter supporting the Ukrainian cause. But yeah, I met a lot of British there, a lot of Americans, a lot of Swedes, a lot of Norwegians, a couple of Irish.
Any common themes coming through from them? Their stories.
Yeah. I say the most common theme would probably be they don't want to hear the sound of air raid sirens coming over their own hometowns. You know, especially for the Swedes. The Swedes have a lot of paranoia about Russia. You know, Kaliningrad, the exclave on the Polish border, is not far away. A lot of Finns would say the same thing. You know, there's always this kind of fear that it could come their way. And for the British, you know, I think the British don't really have a good relationship with the Russians in general.
Would you have suspected any of them of just having ulterior motives? Just this was an opportunity to fire guns.
I mean, in Lviv, you met a lot of these characters, these Call of Duty warriors, these airsoft.
Call of Duty warriors.
These guys who play a lot of PlayStation games and think they're the cheese, and go over to Lviv and cross the border and think they're absolutely mad for it. And what happened in the first week I was there, there was a Foreign Legion base very close to the Polish border, about 30 kilometres north of Lviv. And a bunch of these Egypts arrived and were with their phones doing TikToks and selfies. And the Russians geolocated that position and blew the hell out of it. And about 30 of them were killed in the first week I was there.
I remember that report.
Separated the weak from the herd, basically.
Yes, yeah.
All the professional soldiers, like the ones I was following, they got the hell away from the Foreign Legion after this. They didn't want anything to do with it and found other ways with volunteer battalions to join up. And all those airsoft warriors or those weekend warriors turned pack bags and went home.
In looking at some of your footage, you witnessed dead bodies within feet of you.
I witnessed a lot of stuff, yeah.
And did you witness people being shot dead?
I didn't see anybody being shot dead, but I seen in Mykolaiv the direct aftermath of shelling that I witnessed a little bit above, maybe half a kilometre away in a frontline trench, shells coming in and then, you know, bodies being pulled out of there. Right. So I didn't see anybody directly being blown to bits. And that's
you saw dead bodies?
A lot of dead bodies, but I'd just like to say there's a definite thing, there's a definite difference between witnessing dead bodies around the place and seeing life being snatched away in front of your eyes. It gives you it's much more profound impact on you. I mean, I seen... 5 or 6 years ago, I witnessed a terrible car accident. A little girl died right in front of my eyes, and her lifeless body landed in front of me. And that stays with me far more than anything I saw in Ukraine.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a big difference between the aftermath and then witnessing then life snatched away in front of your eyes. It gives you a great sense of your own mortality. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, in terms of what I saw, I mean, some horrific stuff. I mean, you only get a sanitized version of stuff on the news. You can't. There's a lot you can't show, obviously, you know.
But even those pictures of you looking over the precipice into a sort of a huge crevice where a bridge had been blown up, and there was a car there. It's just that you're right. We don't see those scenes in news because it's all very quick and edited together. But when you linger on those, you just realise the gravity and the tragedy of what's happening.
Well, that bridge in particular, that's the bridge over the Bucha River that separates Irpin from Bucha. And that shots that you saw on my trailer for my documentary, Forsaken Frontier, that was the day of the liberation of Bucha. So directly,
were you there?
Yeah, I was there for the liberation. I was there for the 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks of the battle for Kiev, and then for the 2 weeks after the liberation. So that footage you see from my trailer for the documentary, that is the day of liberation before we went across to Bucha on the other side of the river and witnessed hell on earth, essentially.
Go on.
I mean, just what can I say? Bodies everywhere. You'd be walking around the street, you'd see, dogs eating people's faces, bodies just left on the streets, and people who fled, packs of dogs roaming around eating people's faces. It's just horrific, It's
You need to mind yourself, Finn.
Yeah.
No, because I remember hearing, and I'm sure they still do it, but the Irish Army, if journalists were going out to war zones, they would bring them down to have a course they do to prepare them for seeing dead bodies and the smell of death and all that sort of thing. And it's to make sure that people don't suffer PTSD afterwards. But you've had none of that, have you?
No, I haven't had any of this. No. Correct.
Yeah.
But I know I find when you're in it, you're in it. You don't have time to think about these things. Especially when you're being shot at, or you're in the thick of it, you just go from A to B, B to C. And for me, I have a job to do. It's to follow my characters, to follow the story, and to get the shots needed to tell that story. So right. I'm very much switched on in terms of what I have to do, and I don't think about anything else. A to B, B to C, and if trouble arises, get the hell out of there.
Okay.
It's only when I found it more difficult now to go through all my footage and edit it all together. Like when you're in a more relaxed, safe environment in front of your PC, in front of your computer, that's when the emotions can come out. So I found it more difficult to edit my footage than to actually live it.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder what that says about the human condition and the human brain. Because you're not on that adrenaline rush, you see, when you're sitting down.
No, I mean...
So the brain acts differently when it's fight or flight.
Absolutely. I mean, I didn't feel any ounce of fear in any of the situations I experienced. It was, I have a job to do, get the shots, get the material, tell the story and survive it all. And yeah, it's only when you come out of it. Adrenaline really is a fascinating drug. It's a fascinating drug, but you can experience adrenaline fatigue, which is what I started to experience after the 7 weeks. My body slowly started to give up. My brain was always active. I was only getting 4 hours sleep a night, but you'd wake up to the sound of shelling or wake up to an air raid siren. Or
you had the luxury of being able to turn your back on it and come home.
Yeah, of course. And unfortunately the Ukrainian people don't. They're the ones living it. I was just a witness. So for me to complain or to say how it affect me, I don't want to talk
but that's it. But it is important as well. So how many hours of footage did you get?
I'd say maybe 150 hours of footage. I have plenty of interviews. 7 weeks is a long time, and 7 weeks in a war zone feels like 7 months. Yeah. It's
what happens with that now? What?
Right now, I'm editing a bunch of teaser trailers together, and my working title for my documentary is Forsaken Frontier. And the reason I chose this title is because this war has been going on since 2014. Like I said, my final years of study in history was 8 years ago when Crimea was annexed. And the West turned its back on it. We let Putin do it. We let the war in the East and Donbass break out, and we forgot about it. We left it there, to one side, and we continued on with our Western problems, and it's festered. And look what's happened now. And now the risk is, we could do it again. We're paying for it, but right now the West are paying for it at the petrol pump in the supermarket for the price of our bread. But you know, they're paying for it in their lives and the lives of future generations. So,
right. Well, let us know when you have the finished product. I'd love to see it. And mind yourself, Finn Boylan from Bray. Thanks so much for coming in. Thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.